Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome again to Symmetry of Soul, a virtual study group for students of the Urantia book, and for all of those who are interested in the teachings of the Fifth Epical Revelation. I'm Ann Garner, and I am here with my three co-hosts, Dr. Chris Halverson, James Woodward, and Kermit Anderson. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Ann. Hello, James and Kermit. Welcome again, everyone. Glad you could make it back after our little break.
Yeah, good way to put that, break. Hey, James.
Hi there. Hello to my Symmetry of Soul teammates and folks out there listening. Got a wonderful show for you tonight after losing one last week.
Kermit, greetings.
Greetings, Ann and Chris and James and our loyal listeners there in the chat room and on Blog Talk Radio. We do apologize for last week's dropped show. There were some technical issues that were beyond everyone's control. Should that happen again, though, keep your eyes on the chat room, because it's possible we might be able to reinstate a show like that in the future. We've learned a few things about the technical aspects of the Blog Talk Radio platform, so keep your eye on the chat room if we go dark again, and we'll give you further instructions. Also, want to call attention to this week. This is a religious week packed with religious holidays. Passover begins tonight, or it may have begun last night, but the Passover season, and of course, this is Holy Week, the week of Jesus and the apostles entering Jerusalem for the final episode in his bestowal. So the week before, we did part two of our study, The Betrayal Begins on High. And we looked at section four in paper 53, The Outbreak of the Rebellion, at the annual conclave of Satania, in the presence of the assembled hosts of Jerusalem, the Lucifer Manifesto was issued. Satan allowed that worship could be accorded the universal forces, physical, intellectual, and spiritual, but that allegiance could only be acknowledged to Lucifer, friend of men and angels, and the God of liberty. And we discussed that while nihilism on earth represents a materialistic philosophy, nihilism on high becomes much more complex when the domains and energies of mind and spirit come into play. We also looked at the use of the term friend of men and angels, and this really portrays Lucifer as a friend of the common folk, a typical tactic of demagogues. Self-assertion became the battle cry of the rebellion. Self-government was good for all, but not just certain orders of creatures like the Melchizedeks. Equality of mind and the brotherhood of intelligence were advocated. Lucifer maintained that all government should be limited to the local planets and confederated into the local systems. He further denounced the location of the legislative activities on the constellation headquarters and the judicial activities on the universe capital. He contended that both functions of government should be located in the system capitals and set about to establish a legislative assembly and tribunals under the jurisdiction of Satan. We also had a discussion here when Lucifer removed the component of personality as a determinant in universe destiny, claiming that universe achievement is automatic, self-generated, as opposed to the product of purposive, intelligent effort and struggle. He advocated the compression of the federated vertical universe administrative hierarchy to a horizontal confederation of legislative and judicial functions at the system level. The mercy-motivated delays of justice were cited by Lucifer as evidence that the government of Michael was unable to stop the rebellion. Now, here we had some interesting discussion on the use of the word liberty. Introducing the concept of liberty to an immature, spiritually conscious individual entails danger, risk of domination. An interesting example of contemporary implications of these issues is to be found in the emergence of liberation theology in the 50s and 60s in Latin America. Rather than being about theology, it is about the redistribution of political power from an oligarchy to the people. The major danger here is that oligarchies, in fact, did exploit and oppress the people. The violent remedy of revolutionary action, however, did not produce the fruits of advancing civilization, but increased suffering and misery. Sophistry contains a compelling element of truth that obscures the danger of the elevation of the self in the place of God. We were reminded of the instructions Jesus gave to his followers amidst the scribes and Pharisees in his last temple discourse. Until the Most Highs, who rule in the kingdoms of men, remove those who sit in Moses' seat, he admonished his followers to cooperate with and be subject to these elders of Israel. He did not sanction rebellion or breaking the law. In section 5, the nature of the conflict, in response to Michael's policy of non-interference, Gabriel assumed command of the loyal forces, the loyal hosts of Satania, and announced that he would speak for Michael and that all beings would be left free to make their free will choice as to where to direct their loyalties, saying that the government of the sons for the father desired only that loyalty and devotion, which was voluntary, wholehearted, and sophistry proof. So they already had the liberty Lucifer was promising. For a few years, there was chaos and confusion on the mansion worlds. Lest we conclude that Michael's inaction in allowing the rebellion to run its course was related to the fact that he ruled Nebadon as vicegerent of the father, the Melchizedek author here conjectures that should another such upheaval occur, Michael, with his sovereign authority to deal summarily with insurrection, would likely not act any differently. It should be taken to heart that this war in heaven was real and terrible. Unlike material combat, this conflict was fought in terms of life eternal. And section 6 narrates the story of a loyal seraphic commander. At the outbreak of the rebellion on Jerusalem, the head of seraphic hosts joined the Lucifer cause, taking a large number of the system administrator seraphim astray. The brilliant personality and charming ways of this Lucifer Lucifer spiritually blinded this leader. Here we see again that appeal to the spiritual faculties makes rebellion attractive and deadly to immature creatures. Menodia, the second seraphic commander, assumed command of the angelic hosts of Jerusalem and continues in service on Urantia to the times of this writing. It's worthy of note that the language of Lucifer's declaration of liberty in his call to the liberty-loving, free-thinking, and forward-looking intelligences of the misruled and maladministered worlds of Satania can be heard today in the slogans of the social and political isms and movements of today in their promises of self-determination and self-glorification. Now we continue our study. The Betrayal Begins on High, Part 3.
Nice recap.
Well done,
Bernard.
Very nice.
Yes, well, it was good to have that recap with our little missing week in there in between. Very helpful. So we are going to start into the middle section, middle to the end section of this paper. Before I launch into it, I was wondering if anybody here on the team has any thoughts, comments, something, any threads you wanted to pick up on before we start into the tonight's broadcast.
Yeah, I've got a couple just quick little things that I wanted to throw in, since we are going to shift gears a little bit tonight and really get into the history directly, just a couple of loose ends on the nature of the conflict that I wanted to emphasize from last broadcast. First of all, It occurred to me after the broadcast that just the way I had spoken when I was making a point could have led to some confusion, where it might have sounded like I was suggesting that the word demagogue literally meant the rule of the people. Of course, you know, the rule of the people is the word democracy. You know, literally, people rule. Demagogue is people leader, you know, the leader of the people. And self-proclaimed, of course, is, you know, one of the big issues. But I just wanted to emphasize in bringing that up, you know, why I was saying it the way I did. I mean, when a spiritually conscious person gets the ideals of democracy burning in their mind, they need to be very careful about the power of that thought. You know, the word people, you know, in the word democracy. Because a demagogue is going to use that word people. After all, that's why we call them demagogues. It's why we have that same root in the word as democracy. And, you know, be very, very careful about letting the power of the word democracy spiritually blind you, like Kermit was just reminding us that the leader of the seraphim was blinded like that. You have to maintain your ability to discriminate between that which is true and that which is false. Because if you don't, if you just equate, well, democracy, this proclaimed leader of the people, it's all the same thing. Well, the next thing you know, in your quest, your desire for democracy, what you'll get is autocracy, the autocracy of the demagogue. So that, just emphasizing that, and you know, how subtle and seductive the energies are that are in play when you're talking about sophistries. And then the other point is just, like I said, before we get into the history, just to remind ourselves what they said about the nature of the conflict. I just wanted to read a little bit in that second to the last paragraph of section 5 that we did last broadcast. It says, in the early days of the struggle, Lucifer held forth continuously in the planetary amphitheater. Gabriel conducted an unceasing exposure of the rebel sophistries from his headquarters, taken up near at hand. The various personalities present on the sphere who were in doubt as to their attitude would journey back and forth between these discussions until they arrived at a final decision. And so, you know, to really let that sink in, so that it's very clear that what's going on is not a religious war. These various personalities that are going back and forth between these two camps, they aren't, on the one hand, worshiping God the Sevenfold, and then going over to the other camp and worshiping the God of Liberty. It's not a religious war. And so when you think about what is the Lucifer Rebellion going to look like here on our world, you're not looking for devil worshipers or even atheists. I mean, both of them are just ignorant, primitive-minded people. The Lucifer Rebellion is much more sophisticated than that. It's a philosophic war. It's not a religious war, and it certainly isn't some battle of primitive thought. So when you think about those various personalities going back and forth, on the one hand, they're studying the ideas of God the Sevenfold. And then on the other hand, they're studying the ideas of the God of Liberty. That's the contrast. Studying those two different sets of ideas. It's a philosophic presentation. Now, the study of the ideas of God the Sevenfold, that's exactly what we're going to do in our ascension scheme. I mean, you know, another name for the study of the ideas of God the Sevenfold would be the educational regime of the ascension scheme. That's what we're going to be doing for a long time, is studying the ideas of God the Sevenfold. So, what would we look for here on Earth that would present that philosophic discussion, as they say, the study of the ideas of the God of Liberty? Well, let's just think about how we might coin a name for the study of the ideas of the God of Liberty. The study of. Well, that's the suffix L-O-G-Y. The ideas of. Well, you could use the suffix A-T-I-O-N to indicate that. The God. Well, that's the stem T-H-E-O of liberty. Well, that's the root word L-I-B-E-R. Put those four elements together. What do you have? Liberation theology. Mm. Now, I don't want to, you know, don't misunderstand me. It's not like that's the only manifestation of the Lucifer Rebellion. But it is worth noting that without any intention, obviously, on those people's part, they named their movement the study of the ideas of the God of Liberty, liberation theology. This is how inexorable the pathology of the laws of spirit energy are. Just as 200,000 years ago, various personalities were studying the ideas of God, the God of Liberty. Coincidentally, quote unquote, humans in the middle of the 20th century named their movement the study of the ideas of the God of Liberty, liberation theology. There's great danger in putting thoughts of liberty in the minds of immature personalities.
Ah, well, thanks, Chris. Nice tracking there into those distinctions between the words and some possible things to be looking at in our world today.
Yeah, that helps a lot. It's clarified a lot for me because I'm, you know, and I know many people who studied the Urantia book have often asked that question. What are we, you know, we don't want to look, like you said, we don't want to look for the devil behind every bush, right? But we do need to be more sensitive and take away from our studies of having more discernment
And maybe just another thought along that line. I mean, you know, when you ask, well, why hasn't the Lucifer Rebellion come to an end here on our world? Well, we're just barely getting sophisticated enough intellectually to begin that philosophic war. I mean, until very recent times, we were just very primitive in our thoughts. We're arguing about, you know, whether or not we should worship the devil or not, or, you know, whether or not there's a God or not, or, foolish, childish things. In order to engage the Lucifer Rebellion, you have to be able to actually get up to the level of genuine philosophic thought, where there's some measure of genuine religion and genuine science that are coming together into a genuine philosophic consciousness. It's just now that mankind has entered the ability to take on the thoughts of those two camps on Gerasim, the study of the ideas of God the Sevenfold, which has now been fully revealed to us in the fifth epical revelation, and the study of the ideas of the God of Liberty, which we will inexorably discover on our own when we go astray with our relationship with spirit energy.
Well, that kind of puts it into the current scenario that we've got going here. And so, yeah, you guys think that it's brewing right now, as it were, eh?
Well, we don't have the planetary leadership. We're told we're all too eager for the hero worship or for the worship of a charismatic leader because of our deficit in planetary celestial administration. So and this is where this planetary administration debacle stems from, of course, was the rebellion. But we're primed and ready for a silver-tongued leader to tell us what we want to hear.
Not like that's happened anywhere on this planet.
Interesting way you said that, Carmen. Tell us what we want to hear, not what we need to hear. Yeah.
All these are good lessons to keep in mind, and especially in regard to spirit. That's the one thing that we hope that our listeners might get from, especially this arc that we're doing now, is this distinction between spirit consciousness and God consciousness, and you know it's a thin line. We walk the razor's edge there sometimes. So, anything else you guys want to start in reading tonight? Pick it up.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's just keep God as our nucleus, and we're fine.
Yeah, I like that very well. So we are in paper 53 of the Urantia book, The Lucifer Rebellion. We are on section 7, The History of the Rebellion. And in the old version, you will find that on page 607. The Lucifer Rebellion was system-wide. 37 seceding planetary princes swung their world administrations largely to the side of the arch-rebel. Only on Panopsia did the planetary prince fail to carry his people with him. On this world, under the guidance of the Melchizedeks, the people rallied to the support of Michael. Eleonora, a young woman of that mortal realm, grasped the leadership of the human races. Not a single soul on that stripe-torn world enlisted under the Lucifer banner. And ever since have these loyal Panoptians served on the seventh Jerusalem transition world as the caretakers and builders on the Father's sphere and its surrounding seven detention worlds. The Panoptians not only act as the literal custodians of these worlds, but they also execute the personal orders of Michael for the embellishment of these spheres for some future and unknown use. They do this work as they tarry en route to Edentia. And a nice little note there that we wouldn't ordinarily get about a planet, a race beyond our own. Interesting.
Yeah, and you got to love, they tarry 200,000 years and counting.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's some pretty serious tarrying.
I've always thought of how marvelous it would be to have witnessed this Eleonora. What a remarkable young woman to have been able to pick up, and under the guidance of the Melchizedeks. And that's something that always comforts me, too. We've talked about this in previous broadcasts several times, that even in the midst of the hardest, most difficult times, the Melchizedeks were always here, right? The receivers. And the angels, the seraphim, but the Melchizedeks especially, just that overcare.
You know, in particular, the author of this paper was here.
Yeah,
one of the 12.
Makes it very personal right here. Yeah, good point. And Chris, I want to go back to something, because those seven detention worlds, something we discussed, it's been going over and over in my mind. Back there when we were discussing Abaddon, am I saying that's correct? Yeah. Has ever since acted as chief executive of the Urantia Rebels, you know, when we read that. And the more I thought about it, he could very well be on one of the detention worlds and yet still be chief executive, you might say. There would still have to be some sort of order, wouldn't it? I've been thinking about that more, just kind of throw it. Because at the time, we kind of thought, well, you know, he may still be here, and there's some others still here.
I guess the question was whether or not they're allowed to keep their office, you know, in prison, so to speak.
Yeah. It just kept mulling around with me, especially when I started studying for this broadcast, and I came across this. And I said, oh, okay. So I just kind of wanted to point that out, because we never really came to, how could we know, right? How could we possibly know? Could that be a possibility, Chris? I know because, but.
Chris, just getting back in. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Oh, I was asking you.
We wondered why you weren't speaking up.
Yeah, I got in about 30 seconds ago, and you hadn't noticed that.
I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Yeah,
you raised your hand, too.
I kept carrying on this conversation with you, Chris, and you were so quiet. And I said, well, wait a minute. Normally we go back and discuss things again. I mean,
you know, Chris and quiet is not a common pairing. So,
well, Kermit spoke up, and I thought, okay, maybe I shouldn't have asked that question.
When I first could hear you guys talking again, I asked, so did you figure it out, without me? And got no response, and recognized that no one could hear me yet.
No, I have not figured it out. But you heard what I said as I was studying.
No, I mean, the moment you started talking, it disconnected me. I mean, you got about four words out, and boom.
Well, what did you last hear me say, Chris?
So it was you were going to ask something about the seven prison worlds. can you Can you sum it up in five words or less?
It's been mulling in my mind about Abaddon being...
Still being here? Mm-hmm.
Yes. And as I studied for this broadcast, I said, well, wait a minute. Could he be on one of these spheres and still have this responsibility? Because there'd still have to be some form of order, even though they're there. I said, and that's when Kermit responded like he did.
Yeah. Well, I didn't hear Kermit either, but.
Oh.
But.
You had made a point about the chief of the rebels or chief executive. What was his role anyway? That it's unlikely if he were interred that he would still keep that title, still keep that office.
Right.
As
I mean,
prisoner.
Right. I mean, he's unlike the individuals who recanted their allegiance, as we'll read about in a little bit. I mean, they're not free to roam on those prison worlds. They're bound in some way.
So there's no, they're just really bound, like we would consider prison here. Okay.
Yeah, and
prisoners.
And so it just, like I said, I mean, they're very vague on a lot of these things, but my sense is it. I think he's here. There's no way I can know that with any, perfect certitude.
Okay, I repeated it, and now we'll move on. Okay. But it was a thought.
Throughout this period, Caligastia was advocating the cause of Lucifer on Urantia. The Melchizedeks ably opposed the apostate planetary prince, but the sophistries of unbridled liberty and the delusions of self-assertion had every opportunity for deceiving the primitive peoples of a young and undeveloped world.
Oh, and just even though it's out of context, I was going to make one little aside that's kind of interesting, sort of beyond the Lucifer rebellion. In that previous paragraph, interesting how they, there's spots in the book where they talk about one day the mansion worlds and things will be consecrated to different purposes once the local system of Satania is getting very well settled, heading towards light and life. And it's interesting that you have this embellishment going on. And the Melchizedek says that no one knows what it all means. So it's interesting that even observing things being built for some future use doesn't give them any clues to what that future use is going to be. It's just kind of interesting. But meanwhile, back to the history of the rebellion. That point about deceiving the primitive peoples of a young and undeveloped world, we're about to read that all those who are quote-unquote young in a mindal maturity sense are going to fall victim here. Because it's a philosophic struggle, like pointing out, that's the key, to understand what they're going to tell us here coming up next. It's a lack of critical thinking ability that makes you susceptible to these sophistries, and it doesn't matter what kind of a being you are. If you're immature in that wisdom, cosmic wisdom sense, there's danger in play.
All secession propaganda had to be carried on by personal effort because the broadcast service and all other avenues of interplanetary communication were suspended by the action of the system circuit supervisors. Upon the actual outbreak of the insurrection, the entire system of Satania was isolated in both the constellation and the universe circuits. During this time, all incoming and outgoing messages were dispatched by seraphic agents and solitary messengers. The circuits to the fallen worlds were also cut off so that Lucifer could not utilize this avenue for the furtherance of his nefarious scheme. And these circuits will not be restored so long as the archrival rebel lives within the confines of Satania. So, circuits are down and not to soon be reopened is what I take from this.
It's fairly clear, isn't it, seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
I looked up that word nefarious.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
It's a great word. It essentially means apart or outside of divine law. So it's
yeah.
a very direct use, in apt use in this context, outside of divine law, nefarious.
Yep, good for you, Kermit. Yeah, you really begin to be able to feel the flavor of what they're saying when you appreciate the root meanings of the words more. It's always very masterful the way they choose the words, you know, so that if you know the words, it has a much more living quality to it.
We have a question before we go on from our friend Justin. And by the way, before Justin, Pamela's saying, I wonder how they cut off a circuit.
Yeah, I was going to comment on that, but go ahead with the other question.
And Justin says, and I believe we have actually discussed this, from the mortal perspective, will life look much different on Urantia when the circuits are restored? And if I recall, Chris, you and Kermit, James, we talked about that mortals don't use those circuits.
No, we have no access to those. It'll just be a lot easier for the planetary government to interact with their superiors on high. But unless you are walking around with a harp of God, quote unquote.
Haven't seen one. No.
I've got one of these on my desk.
I think that's a popular misconception. Among all, spiritual idealists in general, that all we have to do is get a little more spiritual here and we'll all be able to communicate with divine beings and the teachers who are much more wise and than we are.
Justin was on was on the same page with us too as we were saying that. So what Pamela said, what you were saying, you were going to make a comment about that, Chris?
Yeah, there's an interesting little subtext here. This expression, system circuit supervisors, they reveal to us about the so-called universe circuit supervisors, the beings at the higher echelons of this whole network. Below the local universe headquarters, all the beings that make this whole set of circuits, and you can see how there's a set that's connected to the constellation and a set that's connected to Salvington. It's a complex network of circuits. Sort of immediate facilitator beings are unrevealed to us, but they're alluding to them here with this system circuit supervisors designation. You notice it's all lowercase. I mean, it's not a it's just a general term, but it's referring to all of those unrevealed beings that make all the mechanics of this happen. Offspring of the Infinite Spirit.
Again, no magic here.
Yeah, and, you know, it just, one of the important things about the fifth epical revelation is breaking from the old mode of religiosity, where you have goodness, but you have a complex set of figments that you bring that goodness into relationship to and attempt to live. You know, and those figments tend to be all kinds of points of wishful thinking. We all wish, you know, when we have spiritual consciousness, that we could grab a hold of the circuits of the gods and tune in. But the revelation is here to coordinate the essential knowledge of religion, all of the facts that are immediately tied to spirit energy. And it's literally an energy. It has all kinds of analogous manifestations that we can understand from material energy. You know, the circuits of material energy, there's circuits of spirit energy, etc. These circuit supervisors are working intimately with all of the power beings, and there's laws to all this, and like I mentioned there, even when you are liberated from this lowly body and have a Marantxa body, increasingly more sophisticated Marantxa body, you still can't, you know, directly connect to these things. They're way above our pay grade.
I just understood what you said, Chris. I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
So again, it all boils down to humility. A little humility on the part of religionists needs to come into play. Some facts that just are facts. That's the way it is.
How about a lot of humility?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are very, very immature, and we're just scratching the surface here. Like we were talking about, as you pointed out, Chris, we're just now getting the intellect to be able to understand, to deeply understand philosophy, be able to discuss it, maybe even debate it, maybe even get a few of these insights. But now we've got this guidebook to help us. Really, really help us with these insights, and still, it's been a long time. I've been reading it, and I'm still sorting it out.
Yeah, it's just like I've mentioned, it should be very sobering once you recognize that some of the smartest people that are alive today believe that it's possible to have a universe without a God. That's how primitive we still are.
All right.
This was the Lannan Deck Rebellion. The higher orders of local universe Sonship did not join the Lucifer Secession, although a few of the life carriers stationed on the rebel planets were somewhat influenced by the rebellion, the rebellion of the disloyal princes. None of the Trinitized sons went astray. The Melchizedeks, archangels, and the brilliant evening stars were all loyal to Michael, and with Gabriel, valiantly contended for the Father's will and the Son's rule.
So a question here, they tell us it was a Lannanidec rebellion. Is there any way of knowing what is the highest ranking universe personality that has entertained rebellion?
Well, I mean, the first problem with that question is it's predicated on the idea that you can stack all the beings in the universe in a simple vertical hierarchy. It's a vast, complex, multi-dimensional energy phenomenon of beings of different forms, and you know, and so in terms of it being a Lenanidek rebellion, and just you know, invoking the hierarchy, you know, which is reasonably vertical of the three local universe suns, Melchizedek, Verandadex, Lenanidex. Like I pointed out, they literally coined the name Lenanidek to indicate that you've dropped below the unity level. You know, it means no longer one-like expression of local universe sonship. So I mean, you can infer that anything that's effectively above the level of the Lenanidek, you know, that level of individuation and hence absence of innate unity within the being, you know, is open to issues. But like I was mentioning in the previous paragraph, there's just countless beings that are unrevealed. So,
right.
You know, it's hard to really know how to think about how much issue there may be beyond, you know, the handful of beings that are revealed.
Yeah.
For some extra reading, extra insight into all this, the Lenanidek sons, you might want to look at paper 35 in the Urantia book, Local Universe Sons of God. There are several sections devoted to them, and I'll read something from section 9, page 393. They tell us that our local universe has been unfortunate in that over 700 sons of the Lenanidek order have rebelled against the universe government, thus precipitating confusion in several systems and on numerous planets. Of this entire number of failures, only three were system sovereigns. Practically all of these sons belong to the secondary and third orders, planetary princes, and tertiary Lenanidex. So they do tell us quite a bit about the makeup of these beings and the reasons, you know, why they are created at that level that Chris was talking about. There does seem to be a plan, even though the plan seems it seems a little tough to us from our perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe just one other little thought about that, Kermit. Just something to reflect on. What about the other six schemes, you know, separate from the Ascension scheme?
Right.
Yeah, who knows
what
kind of rebellion has occurred amongst all the beings that are related to those other schemes, and how you think about the height of that rebellion, in parallel to the Ascension scheme, which is very, you know, sort of neatly tied to Lenanidek, up to Verandadek, up to Melchizedek, in terms of the three levels of Ascension in the local universe. But, it certainly would seem that even with those other six schemes, we're not talking about a phenomenon that goes beyond system level ever. I mean, we do definitely know that the Most Highs are Most High, that the Verandadex are an absolute barrier against rebellion. So it can't get up to the constellation level in any sort of leadership way.
Yeah.
The angels that function at the constellation level, yes. But, so that's about all we know.
Yeah.
And taking that up, as we move on over to page 608, it says, no beings of paradise origin were involved in disloyalty. Together with the solitary messengers, they took up headquarters on the world of the spirit and remained under the leadership of the faithful of days of Edentia. None of the conciliators apostatized, nor did a single one of the celestial recorders go astray. But a heavy toll was taken of the Melantra companions and the Mansion World teachers.
The latter two being both angels or angel-like. I mean, Mansion World teachers are cherubim and seraphim, and Melantra companions are a lot like them. They're created in those positive-negative pairs, just like the seraphim and cherubim. So again, see, notice the, you know, you have just in the fact that they're manifested in complementary pairs like that expresses a measure of individuation, very definitive individuation, leaving them having inadequate innate unity nature to withstand sophistries.
Yeah.
Yeah, the seraphim, they do undergo a training scheme of their own. We know that they, you know, contrary to popular notions about angels, that they're, boom, just created, and they're all perfected and knowing and wise. This isn't necessarily true. There is a hierarchy of angels, and they do have a training regimen. And, yeah, they do have quite a bit of training that they go through down on these lower levels, the companions and Mansion World teachers.
You know, for instance, like with seraphim, you know, if they have enough universe experience that they've made it up to become a celestial recorder, like they just mentioned, you know, not a single one of them went astray. So angels can get to the point that they're sophistry proof, but they're not born that way, by and large.
Lesson there for us, maybe?
Yep. Very definitively.
Of the supreme order of seraphim, not an angel was lost, but a considerable group of the next order, the superior, were deceived and ensnared. Likewise, a few of the third or supervisor order of angels were misled. But the terrible breakdown came in the fourth group, the administrator angels, those seraphim who are normally assigned to the duties of the system capitals. Menotia saved almost two-thirds of them, but slightly over one-third followed their chief into the rebel ranks. One-third of all the Jerusalem cherubim attached to the administrator angels were lost with their disloyal seraphim. And we're getting some. We're going to have quite a few references here as we go along here to biblical passages. And in fact, this note here where I just read, we find some of that recounted in Revelation, Book of Revelation, in Book 8 and 9.
Now we're coming up on chapter 12 in Revelation there.
Well, that one's in quotes, so they do.
Yep.
That's a definite one. But sometimes they slide in these references without quoting them.
Right.
We do find those references in Scripture.
Yeah, and maybe we should just mention for those who are interested in all those different groupings or types of angels, if you go to paper 39 on the seraphic hosts, they have extensive descriptions of all those different, the supreme order, superior, etc. And perhaps from the perspective of those who really doubled down on the rebellion, sad for them that none of the conciliators apostatized, since, of course, those include the executioners of the Ancients of Days.
Leave your sides at the door. Well, you know, the role of leadership here seems to be a little subtext in that Menotio saved almost two-thirds of them, but these were the ones whose leader went into rebellion. And so when you see your immediate supervisor or when you see your immediate commander embrace a sophistry, that's going to weigh on your it's going to tie into your loyalty and your responsibility when you see your actual superior following a wrong path. So
we need
judgment
and independent cosmic thinking.
Well, yeah, as we pointed out several times, because there's some people writing about this in the chat room, you know, surely we are sophistry proof, not having all this great revelation. Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful if we were? But we do have our thought adjusters, and that's something that we have pointed out several times about the angels, and what you were just saying, Kermit, brought that to mind.
Hmm. That, well, as we're about to read, we certainly aren't sophistry proof. But
I know, but I'm just saying that when it because, you know, this is a difficult part of the book to study. It really is. It's because you begin to question many things, which is good.
Yeah.
Which is good.
And that's why there's two parts to that oft-quoted line I just put out there. It's not just independent, but also courageous.
Courageous, yes.
You have to live above fear. You need to get to the point where you can read this and fear not.
Fear not.
Like the master told you.
Fear not.
You know, use it as a litmus test. If you read it and you still are fearful, you need to redouble your efforts to obey what the master told you to do. Like they're going to point out, those interned rebels serve that purpose to many, many celestial beings. They look at who's interned there on the Father's worlds, and they take a deep breath and try to take it up a notch. They know, you know, if they've got to consecrate themselves to get above that level of blind spot.
Independent, courageous, fear not. Key words.
So,
we can
go ahead.
I was going to say, down here we have the ideal of our master who did confront these rebels here. And he succeeded. We're about to recognize that and celebrate that he did rise.
Mm-hmm. And it is in the next section too. But just one other little thing before you read on. Just a thing to keep in mind when you're thinking about all these different angels going into rebellion. All of those lower orders of angels have transport types. And so when you've got transport seraphim that have joined the rebellion, that gives a nice avenue for rebel beings to get here and there.
No hitchhiking, please.
I suspect that loyal transport seraphim would not like the foul taste that a rebel being would leave in their mouth.
Of the planetary angelic helpers, those assigned to the material suns, about one-third were deceived, and almost 10% of the transition ministers were ensnared. In symbol, John saw this when he wrote of the great red dragon, saying, "And his tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven and cast them down in darkness." Now there we have it, Revelation 12:4 there.
And something to keep in mind, because it'll come up frequently, the way they tweak that Bible passage, you know, and putting it in a more proper perspective. It's not so simplistically cast down to the earth, but you know, to think of that, if you want to, as an allegory for cast them down in darkness. Since the ancient mind, all they really had is sort of this dichotomy of heaven above, earth below, and so heaven and earth were symbols for up and down.
Right.
The greatest loss occurred in the angelic ranks, but most of the lower orders of intelligence were involved in disloyalty. Of the 681,217 material sons lost in Satania, 95% were casualties of the Lucifer Rebellion. Large numbers of midway creatures were lost on those individual planets whose planetary princes joined the Lucifer cause. Oh, I think that means Urantia.
Yeah, large numbers.
Large numbers. We had some real mischief going on down here for quite some time. Quite a while.
Yes, we did. Especially once you had secondary midwayers in play.
All right.
The one thing that's always struck me as kind of curious about this statement is the tense of the verb. Of the 681,217 material sons lost, you know, to say it's so past tense like that, as opposed to, have been lost up to this point or something like that. It seems very final the way it's stated, and it's always struck me as odd. I don't know if you're supposed to read into that or not, but it kind of sounds like they might be saying that they don't really suspect any more material sons are ever going to be lost in the wake of Michael being Master Son. I don't know. Not certain about that, but it's just kind of an odd way it's stated.
Yeah, we're going to there's a statement a little later on here where they do talk about that they believe everyone who's gone astray has done so, and or every one of the rebels that has accepted forgiveness or repentance has done so. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I'm just thinking it almost sounds like they're indicating that either they don't think there's going to be any more rebellions, period, or if there is another rebellion, no material sons would be lost in it. I don't know. I may be just reading too much into it, but it's just I know how precise they are at wording things. So,
right.
Well, you know this number. They give us a couple numbers here, so I just did the quick math. Because I can, because we have these handy calculators. So it comes up that 647,156, give or take one or so, were actually casualties. It's a 0.15, so you have to disregard the decimal point there. I don't think we want to have fractional material sums, but... that's a whole lot of beings, and these are really well-trained beings. They go through a lot of time, and they spend a lot of time on these system capitals preparing for their assignments on the evolutionary planets. That's a number that just always has got me, that so many of them just went, oh yeah, sounds like a good idea to me.
And the compliment to that is all those thousands and thousands of years of training, and our Adam and Eve went how many years before the default?
Yeah.
Not many.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Not too many. They got ensnared themselves.
At least it was just default and not rebellion.
In many respects, this rebellion was the most widespread and disastrous of all such occurrences in Nevadon. More personalities were involved in this insurrection than in both of the others. And it is to their everlasting dishonor that the emissaries of Lucifer and Satan spared not the infant training schools on the Finaliter cultural planet, but rather sought to corrupt these developing minds in mercy salvaged from the evolutionary worlds. Ooh, man. What can you say about that?
We're not picking on the kids. That's no fair. No fair.
Pretty low. The ascending mortals were vulnerable, but they withstood the sophistries of rebellion better than the lower spirits. While many on the lower mansion worlds, those who had not attained final fusion with their adjusters, fell, it is recorded to the glory of the wisdom of the ascension scheme that not a single member of the Satania ascendant citizenship resident on Jerusalem participated in the Lucifer rebellion. Yay! Yay for the ascendant plan. At least, you know, once they got to up to Jerusalem, I guess, you know, they were relatively sophistry proof, eh?
Of course, if you were on the first mansion world and you were watching the countless ascenders fall, could you maintain that objectivity about the wisdom of the ascension scheme?
It
seems like adjuster fusion is really the deliverance from that risk.
That's an absolute. But you know, remember, not every one of the Gerasim citizens will have fused.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the real bottom line is that just that little bit of ascension. Getting up to the system headquarters is enough ascension to make you sophistry proof.
Hmm.
Yeah, with the nature that we have, with a father fragment in our nucleus and et cetera.
Hour by hour and day by day, the broadcast stations of all Nevadon were thronged by the anxious watchers of every imaginable class of celestial intelligence, who intently perused the bulletins of the Satanic Rebellion and rejoiced as the reports continuously narrated the unswerving loyalty of the ascending mortals, who, under their Melchizedek leadership, successfully withstood the combined and protracted efforts of all the subtle evil forces which so swiftly gathered around the banners of secession and sin. It was over 2 years of system time from the beginning of the war in heaven until the installation of Lucifer's successor. But at last the new sovereign came, landing on the Sea of Glass with his staff. I was among the reserves mobilized on Edentia by Gabriel, and I well remember the first message of Laniforge to the constellation father of Norlashidek. It read, "Not a single Jerusalem citizen was lost. Every ascendant mortal survived the fiery trial and emerged from the crucial test triumphant and altogether victorious." And on to Salvington, Uversa, and Paradise went this message of assurance that the survival experience of mortal ascension is the greatest security against rebellion and the surest safeguard against sin. This noble Jerusalem band of faithful mortals numbered at just 187,432,811. And I guess you guys probably know there's been some attempts to kind of back figure that number into the whole survival scheme. Now, I don't want to necessarily open that box, but just saying, there's that number.
Thank you, James.
I'll make a quick comment on it, though.
Start off by
the word just doesn't mean only. It means exactly. In this context. Couple things. We've referred to this. Just a couple things to remind yourself why that number is not, a lot bigger than that, which you might initially suspect. You have to remind yourself that they point out to us that you have groups of about 200 worlds that are brought up to inhabited state. You have will creatures in sort of a group. You don't have 1,000 worlds feeding in to Gerasim. You have at most about 200, and of course it's much less than that because it's only going to be the ones that are most recently inhabited that aren't going to the others are going to be already to the point where the mortals are so advanced that they're probably totally skipping the whole local system in their ascension. So you have notice that there's only 37 worlds that joined the rebellion. Gives you a sense of 37 out of roughly 200. So it's just the tail, or just a small subset of that that's feeding into the mansion worlds and into Gerasim at any given time. And then on top of that, they point out, they tell you that going up through the mansion worlds is a huge group phenomenon. It's a huge, just wave of ascenders that are coming up from all of the mortal worlds. But you are graduated off the seventh mansion world onto Gerasim in little classes. And they take a little class of people off, and they go through, the final touches on Gerasim, and then off to the constellation they go. So you don't just have this unregulated mass flowing into Gerasim from the mansion worlds. It's very carefully trickled on to Gerasim. So they get a much more personal experience on Gerasim. In other words, you have a lot of people going slowly through the mansion worlds and a few people going quickly through Gerasim itself. It's like a venturi tube. So, and that's why the number is, not billions and billions. So when people have attempted to back calculate, as you were saying, there's all kinds of incorrect assumptions that they immediately are adopting in trying to generalize that term. Inductive reasoning is fraught with difficulty if there isn't recognition first, going from a specific like this to a general conclusion. You have to be very, very careful about that.
Yes.
Thank you for that. I was never one of those believers, but I've read some things. With the arrival of Lanaforge, the Arch Rebels were dethroned and shorn of all governing powers, though they were permitted freely to go about Gerasim, the Marauder Spheres, and even to the individual inhabited worlds. They continued their deceptive and seductive efforts to confuse and mislead the minds of men and angels. But as concerned their work on the administrative mount of Gerasim, their place was found no more. While Lucifer was deprived...
Let me just make one little quick comment. Deceptive and seductive. Just to notice that they have two words. I got to try to point out, a fallacy is merely deceptive. A sophistry is deceptive plus seductive.
Right.
Yeah. These are sophistries. They're both deceptive and seductive. Now, that spiritual element is what makes it seductive. As I call it, the spirit candy there. The stuff that is just so spiritually juicy and wonderful that you're spiritually blinded by it.
It's all good. It's all good, yeah.
Yeah, and don't see the deceptive part.
While Lucifer was deprived of all administrative authority in Satania, there then existed no local universe power nor tribunal which could detain or destroy this wicked rebel. At that time, Michael was not a sovereign ruler. The Ancients of Days sustained the Constellation Fathers in their seizure of the system government, but they have never handed down any subsequent decisions in the many appeals still pending with regard to the present status and future disposition of Lucifer, Satan, and their associates. Thus were these arch-rebels allowed to roam the entire system to seek further penetration for their doctrines of discontent and self-assertion. But in almost 200,000 Urantia years, they have been unable to deceive another world. No Satania worlds have been lost since the fall of the 37, not even those younger worlds peopled since that day of rebellion. Well, words are getting out, eh?
I'm struck how the principle of due process is applying here. This is the rule of law here. They're following rules. There's no wrath of God coming along here and sweeping things along. This is a very, very organized, lawful place.
Yeah, there is a quote-unquote wrath of God, the Ancients of Days being God, but that's, we haven't gotten to that part of the story yet.
Right.
Yeah. But, and again, it's just so striking, when you see how much it's allowed to run its course. That really, really gnaws at your idealism.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody stop those guys.
Yeah, that was quite a long section there, and interesting commentary. We're going to head on into the next section.
And don't demagogues look for discontent fists can be raised in the battle cry of self-assertion.
Mm-hmm. Injustice.
Injustice.
Especially that last part of that section, what y'all were just saying, makes me think of where Jesus was talking about just as nature allows the wheat and the tares to grow side by side until the harvest. But that one just came. That just came to mind. That's what it has to take process, like you say, Kermit. Due process.
Yeah, and Father gave you absolute free will, so not only can you choose, but you must choose.
Right.
No free ride.
And not automatic.
Nothing automatic. Yeah. If he'd given you just finite free will, then there would be parts that were automatic, but he gave you absolute free will, so absolutely not automatic. Before we read that next one, let me just give you James already alluded to it. Let me just read the paragraph that's sort of the subtext preface of this. Why is it the title of the section, The Son of Man on Urantia, rather than Michael on Urantia. incarnate Michael, or even Jesus, just to say it that way, the Son of Man on your rancha. When Jesus was on Mount Hermon, so that's in paper 134, section 8. And if we just read, I'm going to read paragraph 6 because it's what you're supposed to be remembering by the title of this next section. It says, near the end of the mountain sojourn, Jesus asked his Father if he might be permitted to hold conference with his Satania enemies as the Son of Man, as Joshua ben Joseph. This request was granted. During the last week on Mount Hermon, the great temptation, the universe trial, occurred. Satan, representing Lucifer, and the rebellious planetary prince Kaligastia were present with Jesus and were made fully visible to him. And this quote-unquote temptation, this final trial of human loyalty in the face of the misrepresentations of rebel personalities, had not to do with food, temple pinnacles, or presumptuous acts. It had not to do with the kingdoms of this world, but with the sovereignty of a mighty and glorious universe. The symbolism of your records was intended for the backward ages of the world's childlike thought. And subsequent generations should understand what a great struggle the Son of Man passed through that eventful day on Mount Hermon. Again, he did the philosophic struggle because he had reached a level where he could do that. He wasn't childlike anymore.
Glad you brought that in, Chris. And during this season, there's a lot of movies and TV shows, and boy, that part of it is a struggle for people to grab a hold of that, of what in the world was going on there? Even people, you know, the biblical people.
Mm-hmm.
That one really got in the Bible in a strange way.
Yeah, and they just, blamed you why it's that way.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I forgot to mention that was on page 1493 in the single column.
Good.
So that's the importance. That's why they're referring to him as the Son of Man. I mean, he didn't do it as Michael. He did it wholly as a human. He did what we could challenge ourselves to do, to face even, rebel Lenonadex visually face-to-face and penetrate their foolishness.
Why do you think Lucifer wasn't there with them? They allude to him being on the planet.
He always puts Satan forward. Remember, we talked about that. That's why the revelators decided to use the name Satan for lieutenant. He's the one that's always advocating the cause.
That's right.
Okay, we're ready for section 8?
Mm-hmm.
8.
Yes. Read on.
The Son of Man on your rancha. Lucifer and Satan freely roamed Satania's system until the completion of the bestowal mission of Michael on your rancha. They were last on your world together during the time of their combined assault upon the Son of Man. Formerly, when the planetary princes, the sons of gods, were periodically assembled, Satan came also, claiming that he represented all of the isolated worlds of the fallen planetary princes. But he has not been accorded such liberty on Jerusalem since Michael's terminal bestowal. Subsequent to their effort to corrupt Michael, when in the bestowal flesh, all sympathy for Lucifer and Satan has perished throughout all Satania, that is, outside the isolated worlds of sin.
Interesting little disclaimer there.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think? Who are they talking about, Kermit?
Do we resemble that asterisk?
We're but here.
And of course, the sons of God and Satan came also, is alluding to Job. First couple chapters of Job.
Oh, yes.
And talk about that.
Yes, glad you brought that up.
The conclaves.
What's important that the way you brought in what you did over there in paper 134, Chris, to really understand. And as we're reading, as I read that paragraph, the never-ending question, what do they mean, sympathy? Because they'll bring it up. Well, that's what we're getting. That's what we're learning more and more as we go along, what that means, that philosophical aspect of that word.
Even more than philosophical, literally philosophic.
Philosophic.
I mean, directly philosophic. The ideas, of the God of Liberty.
Philosophic, glad you said that.
Is there sympathy for those ideas? On this planet, yes, there's loads of sympathy for those ideas.
Understanding that far better than I ever have before.
It really doesn't have much of anything, directly to do with Lucifer and Satan at all. I mean, that's the point that is so important to recognize. People who are joining the Lucifer Rebellion on this planet are not, standing under the banner of, Lucifer, literally. They're adopting his ideas because they've gone down the exact same path in their minds that he did, that an ignorant, spiritually conscious person can go down. You get these great ideas in your head, quote unquote, about liberty.
Hey, we just got to keep remembering courageous and independent cosmic thinking. Fear not. The bestowal of Michael terminated the Lucifer rebellion in all Satania, aside from the planets of the apostate planetary princes. And this was the significance of Jesus' personal experience just before his death in the flesh, when he one day exclaimed to his disciples, "And I beheld Satan fall as lightning from heaven." He had come with Lucifer to Urantia for the last crucial struggle. The Son of Man was confident of success. And he knew that his triumph on your world would forever settle the status of his age-long enemies, not only in Satania, but also in the other two systems where sin had entered. There was survival for mortals and security for angels when your master, in reply to the Lucifer proposals, calmly and with divine assurance replied, "Get you behind me, Satan." That was, in principle, the real end of the Lucifer Rebellion. True, the Eversa Tribunals have not yet rendered the executive decision regarding the appeal of Gabriel praying for the destruction of the rebels, but such a decree will no doubt be forthcoming in the fullness of time, since the first step in the hearing of this case has already been taken. Caligastia was recognized by the Son of Man as the technical prince of Urantia up to near the time of his death. Said Jesus, "Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast down." And then still, near the completion of his life work, he announced, "The prince of this world is judged." And it is this same dethroned and discredited prince who was once termed God of Urantia. Everybody's quiet.
Yep, yep. Just listening to the story.
I just wanted to make sure. Okay, you want me to keep reading the story, I suppose. Okay. Oh, what a story. The last act of Michael before leaving Urantia was to offer mercy to Caligastia and Alagastia, but they spurned his tender proffer. Caligastia, your apostate planetary prince, is still free on Urantia to prosecute his nefarious design. But he has absolutely no power to enter the minds of men, neither can he draw near to their souls to tempt or corrupt them unless they really desire to be cursed with his wicked presence.
And just we may talk about this some, but I just want to stress the word really in there, really desire, is very important. It's it can't be actually, it has to be really. It has to be personality, not just spirit. It has to be in play. You have to use your free will to put yourself mindly on the outside of the mindal spiritual shields that are in place. The Holy Spirit, for instance, you can think of sort of as a literal, the literal walls of a sheltered space that the Creative Mother Spirit has carved out for you. Do not choose, don't really desire to go outside those walls.
Gotcha.
Not an adventure. Not an adventure.
Don't go out of that. Yep. Yep.
You're way out of your league. Don't do it.
You know, that paragraph just above the last one here, now is the judgment of this world. I mean, these are Bible quotes, but they're also reminiscent of the judgment, the end of an age, that the bestowal would accompany the bestowal. And so he seems to be speaking in that context of this bestowal is ending and this world is to be judged, just the way any other bestowal, any other mission, dispensation is handled.
But a little bit more than that. Remember, there's two judgments that come to pass. You have the normal dispensational judgment on the day of his resurrection. But then there's the planetary adjudication that occurred at Pentecost.
Okay.
So a little bit more definitively, to the rebellion is that planetary adjudication. When he poured out the Spirit of Truth, you also, had this definitive line drawn in the sand. It's like, all right, that's the end of Lucifer being free to roam, etc.
Right.
So there's a system-wide adjudication to a degree. We're going to read about, but that came down to here too. I mean, that's when he started up the current planetary government regime with the resident governors general and the 420 counselors and all that. All of that is initiated at the planetary adjudication.
Yeah.
So you really have a changing of the guard in the terms of the prince of this world being cast down and being judged.
Yeah.
Kind of, parallel to Laniforge taking over for Lucifer.
And again, more due process, more orderly transition.
Yep. And very methodical, evolutionary.
Before the bestowal of Michael, these rulers of darkness sought to maintain their authority on Urantia, and they persistently withstood the minor and subordinate celestial personalities. But since the day of Pentecost, this traitorous Caligastia and his equally contemptible associate Delagastia are servile before the divine majesty of the Paradise Thought Adjusters and the protective spirit of truth, the spirit of Michael, which has been poured out upon all flesh. But even so, no fallen spirit ever did have the power to invade the minds or to harass the souls of the children of God. Neither Satan nor Caligastia could ever touch or approach the faith sons of God. Faith is an effective armor against sin and iniquity. It is true, he who is born of God keeps himself, and the wicked one touches him not. In general, when weak and dissolute mortals are supposed to be under the influence of devils and demons, they are merely being dominated by their own inherent and debased tendencies, being led away by their own natural propensities. The devil has been given a great deal of credit for evil which does not belong to him. Caligastia has been comparatively impotent since the cross of Christ.
And yeah, go ahead, Anne.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was in preparing for this. I'm sure I've read this before on the air, but faith is an effective armor. And one of my most favorite scriptures is from Ephesians 6. And it is from the Revised Standard, and I would like to read it. And yes, some of it will speak of older language, but I think it's well worth it. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we are not contending against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, against the powers, against the world rulers of this present darkness, against the spiritual host of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand therefore, having girded your loins with truth, and having put on the breastplate of righteousness, and having shod your feet with the equipment of the gospel of peace. Besides all these, taking the shield of faith, with which you can quench all the flaming darts of the evil one. And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. Pray at all times in the Spirit, with all prayer and supplication. To that end, keep alert with all perseverance, making supplications for all the saints. And, of course, this is Paul writing, and also for me, that utterance may be given me in opening my mouth boldly to proclaim the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in chains, that I may declare boldly as I ought to speak. I just had to read it all. Thank you all so much. But
yeah, they're going to quote from it in the next section.
I know.
Yep. Yeah, and
me,
you know,
it came in better, Chris, right there for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just, you know, it's very important, you know, to not forget that you even without a thought adjuster and the spirit of truth, you are invincible. The gift that the creative mother spirit gave you, that encirclement in the Holy Spirit, is an impenetrable shield if you take a hold of the shield. Of course, if you throw it down, it's not going to do you any good. You have to choose to take a hold of that shield. If you reject your encirclement in the Holy Spirit, then that's a different matter. If you're not a faith son of God. But that has to be a wholehearted, consecrated rejection of the Holy Spirit, you know, not some vague, fuzzy, ignorant, immature, childlike notion. We're protected in our ignorance. It's easy to take the creative Mother Spirit and the Holy Spirit for granted. Like I said, no fallen spirit ever did have the power to invade. The minds of a normal mortal. If you're subhuman, if you can't get all seven adjutants connected, and so there's no encirclement in the Holy Spirit, okay, that's another matter. But all normal-minded mortals are children of God by grace.
Well, the chat room just went alive with the question, but we did approach about who really desires wicked presence. You addressed that.
Yeah.
But the,
right.
They are,
and that's the whole thing, yeah.
If
you wholeheartedly
say,
I don't need this barrier, I can handle a rebel personality in the raw. Go ahead, try it. You might find that a being who's lived for millions and millions of years and is wholly iniquitous is a little bit more than you can handle.
The lights are blinking in the chat room about comparatively impotent. Ding, ding,
there
ding.
You go. There you go. I was going to bring that up.
It's a little bit
of a qualification there.
Right, and that's why I said, sure, there are subhumans on the planet who can be manipulated, but not in a direct way, like when we had secondary midwayers. Then it was really bad. But there certainly is, some potential if you're dealing with a wholly debased individual. He's going to have... It can't be so debased that there isn't some measure of spirit energy in play, because that's the only thing that Kaligastia and those guys are going to be able to engage. Like I said, it's not like when we had secondary midwares where, they can engage you directly mindily.
Yeah, it's important to put those two words in the context of that paragraph. Yep.
Or maybe even physically.
Yeah, I mean, sure, the secondary midwares could literally make themselves visible and, give you a bear hug.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shall we press on?
Let's press on to the present status.
The present status of the rebellion. Early in the days of the Lucifer Rebellion, salvation was offered all rebels by Michael. To all who would show proof of sincere repentance, he offered, upon his attainment of complete universe sovereignty, forgiveness and reinstatement in some form of universe service. None of the leaders accepted this merciful proffer, but thousands of the angels and lower orders of celestial beings, including hundreds of the material sons and daughters, accepted the mercy proclaimed by the Panoptians and were given rehabilitation at the time of Jesus' resurrection 1900 years ago. These beings have since been transferred to the Father's world of Jerusalem, where they must be held technically until the Versa courts hand down a decision in the matter of Gabriel versus Lucifer. But no one doubts that when the annihilation verdict is issued, these repentant and salvaged personalities will be exempted from the decree of extinction. These probationary souls now labor with the Panoptians in the work of caring for the Father's world.
Building mysterious structures.
For some future and unknown purpose. Yes. The arch-deceiver has never been on Urantia since the days when he sought to turn back Michael from the purpose to complete the bestowal and to establish himself finally and securely as the unqualified ruler of Nebadon. Upon Michael's becoming the settled head of the universe of Nebadon, Lucifer was taken into custody by the agents of the Uversa, Ancients of Days, and has since been a prisoner on satellite number one of the Father's group of the transition spheres of Jerusalem. And here, the rulers of other worlds and systems behold the end of the unfaithful sovereign of Satania, Paul knew of the status of these rebellious leaders following Michael's bestowal, for he wrote of Caligastia's chiefs as spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places.
Ephesians, yep.
Gee, now where did we hear that recently?
keeping my old armor on here, Chris. trying.
Of course, you know, again, that's one of those handful of interesting little incidental references about Paul didn't just stumble upon that expression. Paul knew his status. You know, they point out that Paul did have some definite visions of things that he drew upon. So
it gave him a lot of information, didn't they? They really tutored him.
Yeah, they really trusted him with that. I've been, and the more we've studied this together, the more I've picked up on that. He could be trusted with it. Interesting.
Yeah.
And John, yeah.
Michael, upon assuming the supreme sovereignty of Nebadon, petitioned the Ancients of Days for authority to intern all personalities concerned in the Lucifer Rebellion, pending the rulings of the Super Universe Tribunals in the case of Gabriel versus Lucifer, placed on the records of the Aversa Supreme Court almost 200,000 years ago, as you reckon time. Concerning the System Capital Group, the Ancients of Days granted the Michael petition with but a single exception. Satan was allowed to make periodic visits to the apostate princes on the fallen worlds until another Son of God should be accepted by such apostate worlds, or until such time as the courts of Yversa should begin the adjudication of the case of Gabriel versus Lucifer. Satan could come to your rancher because you had no son of standing in residence, neither planetary prince nor material son. Macaventa Melchizedek has since been proclaimed vicegerent planetary prince of your rancher, and the opening of the case of Gabriel versus Lucifer has signalized the inauguration of temporary planetary regimes on all the isolated worlds. It is true that Satan did periodically visit Caligastia and others of the fallen princes right up to the time of the presentation of these revelations, when there occurred the first hearing of Gabriel's plea for the annihilation of the arch-rebels. Satan is now unqualifiedly detained on the Jerusalem prison worlds.
Yeah, so some fun little tidbits there. Maybe one technical point, too, to mention, when they say... you had no son of standing in residence. You know, carefully the way they've worded that. I mean, at the time that I read, when Jesus was on Mount Hermon, I mean, technically, he became titular planetary prince of Urantia at that point.
Right.
But see, it's, you know, he didn't assume that in residence. You know, he didn't literally take up standing here. And so, you know, it wasn't until around the beginning of the 20th century when he made Macaventa vicegerent planetary prince that things changed.
Since Michael's final...
One other thing, maybe since we mentioned that whole bit about how they modified it from being cast down to the earth to being cast down to darkness, they modified that one Bible passage. One of the things that's in play that you recognize is when Satan was interned, if you blur Caligastia, Satan, and Lucifer all together into one evil being, like current human ignorance of these issues does, you have this evil being that's roaming the heavens and the earth. You get rid of the you know, the roaming of the heavens. You get rid of Satan, and now all there is Kalagastia here on earth. And so effectively, this evil personage, this iniquitous personage, has been cast down to the earth. And so that's one of the that's sort of the truth behind some of the humans' senses of this over the centuries, or even that something happened at the beginning of the 20th century. They're confirming, yes, something did happen. That's when Satan was rounded up.
Interesting. There must have been some connection with that and the initiation of the Urantia revelation, the Urantia papers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Since Michael's final bestowal, no one in all Satania has desired to go to the prison worlds to minister to the interned rebels, and no more beings have been won to the deceiver's cause. For 1900 years, the status has been unchanged. We do not look for a removal of the present Satania restrictions until the Ancients of Days make final disposition of the arch-rebels. The system circuits will not be reinstated so long as Lucifer lives. Meantime, he is wholly inactive. The rebellion has ended on Jerusalem. It ends on the fallen worlds as fast as divine sons arrive. We believe that all rebels who will ever accept mercy have done so. We await the flashing broadcast that will deprive these traitors of personality existence. We anticipate the verdict of Yuversa will be announced by the executionary broadcast, which will effect the annihilation of these interned rebels. Then will you look for their places, but they shall not be found. And they who know you among the worlds will be astonished at you. You have been a terror, but never shall you be any more. And thus shall all of these unworthy traitors become as though they had not been. All await the Yuversa decree. But for ages, the seven prison worlds of spiritual darkness in Satania have constituted a solemn warning to all Nebadon, eloquently and effectively proclaiming the great truth that the way of the transgressor is hard, that within every sin is concealed the seed of its own destruction, that the wages of sin is death. Presented by Manavandit Melchizedek, one time attached to the receivership of Urantia.
Did you notice in that third to the last paragraph, Anne, right at the end, see, meantime, he, Lucifer, is wholly inactive.
Yeah.
See, that's why it just doesn't seem like there can be the activity that they're alluding to.
Yep. I hear you.
I think it's got to be here.
It's really fascinating how on our world we have kind of, you know, a dichotomous division. We've got super sophisticated religionists who would essentially say that super sophisticated, spiritually minded people who would scoff at the idea of the devil, and they would essentially give him no press and give him no recognition. And then on the other hand, and they could still subscribe to the sophistries almost unwittingly. And then on the other hand, you have some of the old-time fundamentalists who give the devil way more credit than he is due, as if he's waiting to pounce on you the minute you step out your door. And so you've got two widely disparate views of this same phenomena, and each one of them tends to stifle our ability to discern the real motives and the real workings of this rebellion in our world today.
Mm-hmm. And of course, those two disparate groups share something in common, the same childish notion of the devil, evil, sin, etc. Hell.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. One's rejected and one's accepted.
Right. But they're looking at the same false picture.
Right.
And you know, just responding in opposite ways to it.
Right.
You know, the actual devil is a very, very intelligent, sophisticated being. And you know, I'm using the word being loosely. He's just an entity now. He's not personal anymore. But you know, a very, very sophisticated entity with a mind that's vastly greater than any great intellect on this planet. You know, in human form. You know, so you know, if those people who would scoff at the notion of a rebel being, you know, had an actual picture, you know, that would give them something to consider a little bit more carefully.
Yeah.
We're getting close to the wire here, and there's been several questions asking. I'm going to recommend, and that's good. Questions are coming up, and I'm seeing Ellen in particular. You keep coming in. I believe, like someone already stated, that question has been partially answered, and we're going to be getting into it more next week about the because so many people are still concerned about that unless they really desire to be cursed with the wicked presence. And, you know, and
again, just ask yourself a simple question: do you really desire it? I mean, if you don't, then you're fine. Yeah. You know, and don't worry about others.
There you go. All right.
The worst thing that anyone else could do to you is kill you. What are you afraid of? They can't touch your soul.
There you go. So, wow.
You know, and again, I mean, courage. I mean, no. I mean, do they end this paper with a warm, fuzzy blanket?
Nope.
No, they end with the wages of sin is death. They end with a stark, cold fact. You can't pretend that fact doesn't exist. Choose. I mean, the rebellion doesn't change the choice. The choice is there with or without a rebellion. There is eternity and oblivion. You always have to choose.
Yeah, that's a very good point, that you actually have to use the gift the Father gave us, which is ourselves, and personalize our lives to those choices and consecrations.
Yeah. The rebellion doesn't change the choice.
That's right. That's right. And it's not automatic. You don't just you're not just carried on this wave of spiritual bliss through the training regimes of the universe.
Yeah. Right. You're not born on the wings of angels to paradise just because you came out of your mother's womb.
All right.
You know, and so,
why we live.
Go ahead.
Why we lived in the mind reason, mind arena of choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, why our decision, do we live or die?
Yeah, I mean, they just hit you with, you know, a three-barreled shotgun at the end there. You know, they give you Proverbs. You know, the way of the transgressor is hard. They give you that classic old adage that everyone quotes, you know, about having the seed of its own destruction concealed within it, and the wages of sin is death. I mean, they don't want to give you any wiggle room. Courageous, courageous and independent cosmic thinking. Choose this day whom you will serve.
Yeah.
As for me, I will serve the Lord.
Amen and amen.
And I want to say to also one that I always really love. Old things are passing away and all things are becoming new. We must remember that and let go of some things, because I know, Kermit, you were talking about that dichotomy. I've been in those arenas with the fundamentalists where they were looking, and really you thought you saw devils around, you know, demons.
Right.
And you just got to let that stuff go and trust, because that was at a time when, I'm just going to say, the ignorance was there. And, you know, so
well,
the way we use
we're off
we're
the
there.
Air.
We're there, folks.
I think it's time to wrap it up. Those who are listening to the recording, we can give them a farewell.
Well, did we end with me saying, I guess it was my ignorance?
Well, tune back in next week. We're going to continue this section into paper 54, Problems of the Lucifer Rebellion. Thanks, everybody, for joining in with us. And join us, please, next week.
Bye for now. God bless.
Bye for now.
All right. Got too much in there.
God bless you all.
Bye.